com. Start off on your roadways. Looking pretty clear across the Central Coast. In the Salinas area, Highway 101 near Reese Circle, have an animal on the roadway there to watch out for. And a mudslide on Eureka Canyon Road on the 400 block in that area, the South Santa Cruz County area. 475-1080 is the number to call with your traffic tips. Your Central Coast weather today, scattered clouds, highs in the mid-60s today. Your forecast for tonight, partly cloudy, lows in the mid-40s, and northwest winds at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Coming up next on KSCO, we have the Saturday special, filling in for MZ. We have Scott Gold and Sam Quentin.
Good morning, a brighter day is here. Good morning, may we bring you cheer.
We've got time, we've got tunes, we've got time, tunes, and temperature.
Get up and go, it's today, you know, on KSCO Radio.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
It is Saturday special time. I'm Sam Quinn.
Scott D. Gold here, bright and early.
And we're glad that everybody's here with us, trying to mess up MZ's show.
I don't know about you, but I'm still trying to clear the cobwebs from my head.
Yeah.
This is, I know a lot of people don't think this is early, but it is.
Yeah, this is early for me, too. I'm more of an afternoon, nighttime kind of a guy. But I am absolutely stoked about this show.
Is the clock off an hour, or is that just me?
Yeah, actually, yeah.
I know. I think I'm telling everyone.
Don't look actually, at that if you clock here, on the wall there. No,
I'm telling everybody it's early, but here it's actually 11, 7 minutes after 11 here.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm excited. We had this idea quite a few weeks ago, and we thought we'd get a couple people, both ends of the spectrum here, off the Deadliest Catch. Friends with Todd Stanley and Mike Redekop. Mike Redekop comes from, I guess, based out of Seattle. I think everyone's based out of Seattle for the most part.
How did you come to know these people as friends of yours?
It's funny you should ask, Sam.
Hilarious.
Hit me with it. Extreme. I'm down in Mexico a lot and down in Baja, and I was down with another friend of ours, and we're surfing, and I ended up meeting Mike Redekop, and he's a big guy. He stands out in Mexico, put it that way.
Okay.
He's got typically I don't think I've ever seen him without a mouthful of Copenhagen, teeth to match, just a big dude, you know, big surly white man in Mexico. We got out and we ended up meeting this guy who was drinking some Tecates. He'll tell the story differently, but we offered him a beer and we got to know each other. Just so happened about six, you met him and he had talked about what he was doing down there. He was, part of his bio, he was the first one to develop the first offshore commercial crab fishery in Mexico. And that's what he was doing down there in Central Baja. He was developing a crab fishery down there.
Okay.
Well, we're down there surfing. We have property down there. And I met him. Well, 6 weeks later, I was down there again. And sure enough, I was down in Ensenada this time, walking down the street. There's Mike Redekop. You know, he stands out when you see the guy. He stands out like a sore thumb. I ended up saying, hey, Mike, you know, and so I'm not even kidding you. A couple months later, I was somewhere else in Mexico, saw him again. So it was pretty funny. We became friends.
No longer a coincidence.
No longer. Yeah, that's what I said. Either I was following him or he was following me. But long story short, we had become friends, and he actually introduced me to Todd Stanley, who is one of the main producers, I believe, from 2005, from since day one. He's been on the boat, and we get to – and I suggest you call in, ask the questions that you've always wanted to ask. You know, he's been out there. It is I don't know which is more dangerous. He'll be able to answer that. I actually feel like after reading and talking to these guys, but being a cameraman – green on a boat out there in the sea, it's probably more dangerous than actually the fishing.
Yeah, than the actual deckhand job itself.
And because the positions they put themselves in, the stuff they do just to capture what they're doing. Imagine where the cameras are, you know, put yourself behind it, you know. So we get to ask all those questions, which is exciting because the new season just started. And,
yeah, started Tuesday.
Yeah.
With a interesting twist about...
And you're a big fan.
I have become a big fan just in the last year. And I sort of was playing catch up, you know, when they would run episodes on the weekends, like all day, yeah. You know, back to back to back to back to back. So you could like catch up on an entire season in one Saturday. So, you know, I got familiar with the show and some of the people on it, and it was fascinating to me. Just how dangerous it is, how tough the men have to be to do that job. And I'll tell you, the way that I got into this topic, I sort of found a cheesy way to come up with an excuse to do this show because I just really wanted to do a show about the Deadliest Catch because I think it's awesome. But I started thinking about the most dangerous jobs in America. And at the top of the list is crab fishing.
Well, that's funny because I want to say Dr. Corey Gold would argue and say that dentist, I heard something on a show.
Was
it the dentist?
I think
dangerous.
That has more to do with suicide rates.
I keep hearing him say that it's a dangerous job. Dentistry?
For some reason, dentists kill themselves more often than other professions. But as far as dying on the job in the line of duty, the statistics are 116 per 100,000 workers are fatalities. And that's a lot. I mean, that's a dangerous job. I think second highest on the list was a logger. And
I imagine logging is pretty dangerous.
Logging is very dangerous.
I think Todd might give us some insight. I think he has some insight on that, the Axeman and all those shows too. So
we
got questions about that.
You know, this is all about the Deadliest Catch, about the show, the people who produce it, film it, and the actual
with that. Captains. With that, I have some questions about, and I kind of got hooked on this Bering Sea Gold. So I know he produced that, too, so I'm going to ask him some questions about that.
That's on his rather impressive list of other shows that he has done.
And I don't know if you guys have seen Bering Sea Gold, but it was a short season. Seven or nine episodes, but there's a guy named Scott on there that is just – What a jerk. I mean, the guy, I love him. He's my favorite one on the show. It's just nonstop insults and just, I mean, a bitter, and I don't know how much that is real or not, but I watched the wrap up show and I've actually watched in that, you'll notice on Todd's resume, he's on some of the wrap up shows for the Deadliest Catch, which is funny to turn it on and see him on there. We become friends over the past, you know, 3 or 4 years. And just turn it on and see him on there.
Yeah.
But on the wrap-up show, this Scott character ends up beating up his boss on the show. Which I loved. I thought it was awesome. The guy wanted to – Vern, I think the boss's name was Vern, and he wanted to go, and they got it on. So we could ask him about that, too.
Wow. Okay.
Let's introduce Scott – or, I mean, Todd. Excuse me.
Okay. Well, we have Todd Stanley with us. And Todd. Hello, Todd. Hello, Todd.
I think he'll agree with me. This is early also.
Hello, Todd. Okay. I don't have Todd.
Paging Dr. Stanley.
All right.
All right. Do we have Mike on the line?
All right.
Well, let's introduce Mike.
You know something? It says I have Mike here, but, you know. All right.
Well.
Hello?
Hello. I can do my mic. I can do my Mike Redekop impression.
You know something? Mike, do I have you there? All right. Well,
let me give you Mike sent me
Todd
some
Stanley
stuff in there.
Background a, while we see if we can get him back.
Let me read something to you first of all, Mike Redekop, we'll start with him. Looks like some people are phoning in. Here's something he sent me cuz he's told me all these stories over the years and his, you got to realize that he's been up in Alaska his whole life. This is his dad. Apparently, his dad had more permits in Alaska than combined than anyone else. This is a family that's been in there, and like the earlier show, the food chain, this is the same thing. These guys feed all kinds of countries with this fish. It's a big deal.
You guys hearing me now?
Hey, is that Todd?
Yeah, that's Todd.
Okay. Awesome. Great, we got you. Sorry about the technical difficulty here. I'm a greenhorn.
That's okay.
This is all digital now. This is a high-end situation now. They changed this whole studio. This is the equivalent of that system you guys edit on that I was looking at, but in radio. Take all the video out.
How's it going this morning?
It's going great. How are you doing?
Good. Yeah, it's a little early for me.
I know. Back up now and tell me tell everyone what it's like to unplug. I called you the other day and we got on the phone and I think you got up around 3. What is it like to come off of the boat out of Alaska? It takes you what, a week or two to try to even unplug it? You said it was extremely cold.
I think I've been home for about 10 days and it really is hard to unplug. Everybody wants a piece of me. I've been gone for so long. My phone rings off the hook constantly, so it's almost more stressful coming home playing catch up.
But you said it was probably the coldest season, and I know you can't say certain things, the season's coming out, but you said it was the coldest season, just the most miserable season this year.
Well, it depends on who you talk to. It's certainly the coldest season I've seen, but most of the captains are all saying that this is the worst weather that a lot of them have seen. Some of the oldest guys that have been around a long time are saying this is the worst weather in 30 years. We had ice that extended down south of St. George Island over 100 miles, which is somewhere it depends on who you ask, but that's about 200 to 300 miles south of where it would normally be this time of year. And it was a cold, freezing cold winter.
And you've been on this. You started with Deadliest Catch, correct?
Yeah, we started. We started out with a show called Deadliest Seasons, which was prior to Deadliest Catch, and sort of Deadliest Catch was a spinoff from that. We were just going to do a one-hour documentary that turned into a three-hour special that turned into the highest-rated show in Discovery Channel's history, and next thing you know, we're making Deadliest Catch.
So you've been on there since day one. I don't think a lot of people understand where it started and how it ended up. And how dangerous it is for you guys. I don't, how long are you on the? You're on there just as long, but you're up before everybody. You get to bunk down after everybody. I mean, it's a pretty serious thing. I think for me personally, I looked at it and I've looked at it as like it's probably more dangerous than actually doing the job in some ways. Is that true?
Everybody always wants to know about the danger and the danger. It is dangerous, but, it's getting in your car and driving to work is dangerous, too, I don't know. It's the thing that really stands out in my mind the most is that when we first went up to do Deadliest Seasons, which was this supposed one-hour documentary on the crab fishing industry, we didn't even have boats to go out on, and we spent 2 weeks in town prior to the fishing season. Walking the docks and jumping on boats and saying, looking for boats that were interested in letting us sort of document what they do. And, that was my brother and I, Doug. We got thrown off of so many boats, and nobody wanted to have anything to do with us, And we finally did settle on a few boats, and we went out and...
Is that because they thought you'd be a distraction to the crew, or... To what they're doing?
This is back in the day when the fishing was a derby-style fishery, which sort of means that it's a shotgun start, and the clock starts ticking, and you have only a certain amount of time to catch that crab quota, and then when that clock stops, the whole fleet has to stop fishing, so a lot of pressure. These guys are making their entire year's salary in literally... Those seasons back then were only anywhere from 4, 5, 6 days long. was it. And so, yeah, there was a lot of pressure on their part to they didn't want any distractions.
So what happened that first season? You finally found, obviously you did the documentary, and you finally found some boats to go on.
Yeah, we went out on some boats, and man, it was amazing. And I remember reporting back to the production company, God, this is unbelievable. This is so compelling, and we were so excited about it. And we're like, we should keep an ongoing series going here, and almost literally was almost laughed at. It was like, yeah, calm down kind of a thing, you know. And, of course, when we turned all the footage in and everything and they started going through it, it was like, wow, this really is amazing and compelling and holy cow. And, well, we'll make 3-hour special instead here. And so that's what ended up happening. And then, of course, it aired and it was very popular. And it was like, let's figure out how to keep an ongoing series here. So that's how it happened.
The boats that you went out on for the original show, are any of them still involved in Deadliest Catch?
Yeah, well, I guess it would be it's hard to, everything, the years run together now. I'm trying to think. I think maybe the Northwestern was, actually, I don't think they were even on that Deadliest Seasons, but they might have been. I can't remember. Don't hold me to it.
Okay. We're not going to. We definitely won't hold you to it.
All right.
I've heard, over the years.
I hear you talking about Mike Redekop there. You know, it's great hearing his name because he certainly was involved with it.
You know, we do have him on the line. I'll tell you what, we are going to take a break, pay some bills. Hope you'll hang in there with us, and we'll be right back.
We've got a lot of questions for you.
All right.
Sounds good.
We'll take it away then.
Every day you hear, hi, how you doing? You're looking good. You see, to some extent, we are all concerned about our own and the health of others close to us. And when all is not well, let the staff at Horstlander Pharmacy come to the rescue. Hello, I'm Mark Wilson, pharmacist at Horstlander Pharmacy. We are part of a network of local, independently owned Health Mart pharmacies. As many can attest, you can depend on Horstlander's for its pharmacy expertise and personal service. Also, for those without prescription coverage, you'll be pleasantly surprised at our low prices.
Hi, Rosie Chalmers here. I have been a customer of Horstlander's Pharmacy for almost 20 years. Fabulous service, always a smile. They know who you are. It's the best in personal service. I highly recommend Horstlander's Pharmacy.
Swing by, take a look. Better yet, bring in or transfer your prescriptions to Horstlander Pharmacy, the locally owned Health Mart Pharmacy that cares for you and about you. 1226A Soquel Avenue, Santa Cruz. Call 423-2315. Or horsenider.com.
Spring is just around the corner, which means it's time to get your RV and trailers ready to roll. Hi, I'm Rena Mills of RV Service Center of Santa Cruz, your locally owned RV parts and repair center with over 36 years of service to the Central Coast community. In addition to RV repairs, our qualified staff services and maintains boat, horse, and utility trailers and toy haulers. We also restore vintage RVs and work hand-in-hand with all insurance companies to ensure your RV is restored to its original condition. Get your RV and trailers ready to roll into spring with the help of your friends at RV Service Center. You'll find us easy to reach and easy to use at 2525 Mission Street, cross street of Mission and Swift in Santa Cruz. 831-427-0881. Again, 427-0881. Or you can email us at rvscsc.com.
Our local Red Cross responds to over 2 home fires every week here in the Monterey Bay Area, and electrical problems are a leading cause of home fires. Hello, I'm Chris Jensen with JM Electric. One cause of home electrical fires is degradation, which simply means that your electrical wiring and connections have become old and worn out. Prime conditions for starting a fire in your home. JM Electric's current safe inspection can determine if there is degraded wiring inside your walls. To see if your home can benefit from a current safe inspection, call JM Electric today for a free, no-obligation assessment, 422-7819, or jamelectric.com. Now a word from our friends at your local Red Cross.
Hello, I'm Camilla Bellutti, and the development manager at the Santa Cruz County chapter of the Red Cross. There were 117 home fires in the Monterey Bay area last year, which means a lot of families needed our help. You can help them by donating your time and money to your Santa Cruz and Monterey Red Cross chapters. We thank you, and your friends and neighbors thank you, too.
You're listening to KSCO, serving Aromas, the Carmel Highlands, and Paraiso Springs.
This must be our
book. I know. I'm waiting for something exciting to happen.
Okay.
I'm almost kind of scared being this close to the ocean.
You are listening to the Saturday special on KSEO AM 1080. I am Sam Quinn. That is Scott Gold. And this is all about the deadliest catch. And we have Todd Stanley with us on the in the deadliest catch. Let's bring him back in.
I've got so many things, and this is difficult, Todd, because
I know.
We talk on a regular basis. I know all this stuff, but I got so many questions. I want to talk to you about the Emmy Awards. I want to talk to you about the building storylines, you know, things that you do that make this show great, you know, and I think people are going to want to call in and ask a lot of those questions too, but explaining who you are and what you've done, you've touched on the beginning parts, how it came about. You know, you have the number one show basically in the not just the country but the world, is that correct?
Yeah, I think it's somewhere up there in the world. I mean, I know it's very well watched. I'm a television producer. It's what I do, you know. And it's so funny to think back. You know, I guess it's been 9 years now, and I think back to that it's one of those phone calls you get in life. You know, I'd actually already been. I spent about 10 years in Alaska running. I was a commercial whitewater river guide for many years of my life. I spent in the Grand Canyon. Those were 18-day trips and whatnot. But, you know, spending all this time in Alaska, I always read a lot of books about Alaska because I love Alaska. And one of the books I read was Spike Walker's Working on the Edge, and it was all about the crab fishing industry. I remember reading that book, and to this day, it is one of the most impressionable books I have ever read. And I remember just being like, wow, there's this group of guys that are crab fishing in the Bering Sea, and what crazy stories. And I remember reading that and going, wow, I would never do that. I couldn't believe who would go and do that, you know? And so you get that call one day, and it's like, yeah, we're doing this documentary, you know, we went on the crab fishing industry in Alaska, and it was just like, holy cow, what a great idea. Why didn't I think of it? And, you know, we got set up there, and that's sort of how it started. But I knew right away from the phone call, already knowing a lot about the crab fishing industry, I was like, this is going to be a number one hit show. I guarantee it.
You probably felt the same way when you got my phone call the other day saying, hey, we want you on the radio. How exciting.
won the Emmy for Outstanding Reality Program last year for The Deadliest Catch.
We sure did.
That's a big one.
It was a big one. You know, we've been nominated many years in a row now. And for both in cinematography and for producing, and you know, it was great. Not only did we win in that category, but we took a clean sweep in all the categories for editing, sound, cinematography, producing. I mean, it was an exciting time to go to those Emmys. You know, the first time I got nominated, it was like, wow, that's amazing, you know, because for me, I've never really been in television. It has never really been about the awards and, hey, oh, I hope I get an award someday and et cetera. So when we got nominated, it was like, wow, that's pretty big honor there. And we went down to the Emmys there in L.A. You know, of course, we didn't win that year. And after going and going through the process and seeing people win and get those golden statues and carrying them around at the after party and stuff, it was like, became really clear. It's like, I want one of those things.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
That's funny. They, we're going to introduce one of your friends, and this is how I met you basically through Mike Redekop. He's on the line. Let's get him on here. Yeah.
We got you. You're on KSEO.
Yeah, you got me.
All right.
Yeah, buddy.
Out of Ensenada, Ensenada, California, Ensenada, Baja. He's down in Ensenada working on a boat.
Yep, I'm in Ensenada. I got a new boat that I just bought in the shipyard here, and we're down here working.
You bought it. He bought it in Alaska, and he shipped it down to Ensenada.
Boy, we bought it in.
Going, huh, Mike?
Yeah, you bet, Todd. You bet. Hey, it's good to hear you, man. Good to hear you. So,
yeah, you too.
I can't say the same for Scott. That's just a bunch of bullshit that he's spewing out here this morning. But that's the way it goes.
You gotta curb the language a little bit.
Let me
give you guys out there a little thing that he sent me.
References to natural things.
Listen, here's a quote. Mike sent me some of this, and I know that Todd will back up some of these stories. To quote Commander Trosvig of the United States Coast Guard cutter Yacona, 17th District. This is the closest thing to high seas piracy I've ever seen in 40 years of service in the North Pacific. Tell us a little bit about that without swearing. I know it's going to be difficult.
Well, you know, it all goes back to, you know, it kind of goes back to what Todd was saying earlier. You know, there was a time here right during the inception of the Deadliest Catch program, that, you know, we had been involved. I'm a third generation Alaska commercial fisherman, and what we had seen at that point was our fishing areas were getting reduced, our fishing times were getting reduced. There were more and more boats entering the fleet. We were under so much pressure to produce and make our living in these postage stamp allotments of time that, you know, things started getting pretty wild out there. And, you know, myself, I grew up, if you wanted to eat or you wanted to have things in your life that you desired, you rolled up your sleeves and you just busted your butt and worked hard to achieve it, you know. And the harder you worked, you know, the school that I came from was the harder you worked, the more you caught. The more you caught, the more money you made. The more money you made, the more things you could have in your life, you know, or your desires. And what it got to be was it got to be so stressful that the incident that you're referring to right now, and I think I've told Todd this story. I had the chance to be with Todd on his first ever voyage into the Bering Sea. So I spent some time with Todd. Todd interviewed me a lot, and I think he heard this story as well. But you know, we were out fishing, basically 90 miles offshore, fishing hard. We had some guy in another boat fishing around us that was just being a complete idiot and didn't know the area. I'm talking about 17 other boats that were in that general location. And this guy was just trying to horn in on the action. There wasn't enough action for the 17 local boats, Alaska boats that were there. He was an outside boat from Seattle, which us being born and raised in Alaska and being Alaska fishermen, we that's a whole nother subject. We could have another radio show about that. But this guy came and he was setting his gear all over the top of a bunch of buddies of mine. And he hadn't really bothered me yet, but 3 days into the season, he set a bunch of gear on top of me, and I called him, and I was mad, and I blew up. And, you know, at that point, I think we were probably 70 hours without sleep. And, you know, you just don't want to screw with a guy that's not slept or ate very much in 70 hours.
Well, back up a second. When you set over the top of someone, you basically could ruin their season by, is that correct? When you set on top of someone, you're going to.
What he did is he cost me about $140,000 worth of lost gear. I lost my gear underneath the guy, and I wasn't any too happy about it because that 140 grand worth of fishing gear laying on the bottom of the ocean was coming right out of the product that I had on board about that time. And what it amounted to is that I had just spent the last 70 hours of my life working to pay for that gear that guy cost me. So I was pretty ticked off and running on Copenhagen and coffee. And as you know, my Copenhagen intake increases when I'm fishing. Todd will vouch for that. But I was chewing about three cans a day and drinking gallons of black coffee. And this guy wants to come mess with me. So what it ended up, I asked my guys, I said, hey, let's go give this guy a piece of our mind. I saw him out my windows. We ran up to him. And the end result was it was steel to steel 90 miles offshore. My crew just beat the shit right out of his crew. Or beat the stuffings out of him. So there was it was a little bit of piracy, but, you know, it was payback. And that was the stress that we were all under, you know. So
you guys went out the first time together. Is that correct, Todd? You guys were out there and you're interviewing him?
Yeah, that's correct.
And am I correct? Is that the worst season you ever had, Mike?
Yeah, it was, I laugh because it was pretty something. I'll tell you what, Mike, I still see that boat, the Western Viking, man. I look at it and I go, I cannot believe that we went to sea on that boat and came home.
That was crazy.
You're surprised you ever made it back to port?
You were in good hands, man.
Oh, that boat was not built or even meant for the Bering Sea.
That boat was built for the Bering Sea in its day. And what has happened now is as technology has increased and the number of lives lost, we learned how to build a boat capable of protecting a crew and handling what the Bering Sea has to give out. And that all transpired over years.
What's that, Todd?
Well, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, but I thought that boat was came from Louisiana or somewhere. I thought it was a scallop boat.
Yeah, it was. It came from the East Coast. But you gotta remember, Todd, that like the Wizard, let's talk about the Wizard. That boat was built by the U.S. Navy to be a yard oiler in Maryland. I mean, that has became a crab boat. The Cornelia Marie, that was built on the Oregon coast. Those are modern day crab boats. But back in the day, there were no boats built on the West Coast, nor in Alaska, for that matter, that were capable of handling. Guys were using boats from different parts of the country to go up there and see if they'd handle it out there.
Right.
Let me just add, if you guys want to call in and ask some questions, here's your chance to call in and talk to Todd and Mike.
831-479-1080.
Behind the scenes questions you want to ask some tough questions.
If you want to talk about the deadliest catch, we got the guys.
Yeah,
the pros from Dover here. Let's take another break right now. Todd and Mike, if you guys will hang tough with us here, we're going to take another break, pay some bills. We'll be right back.
There's a new newspaper in the Monterey Bay area, and it has real news in it. Hello, I'm John Chown, publisher of the Monterey Bay News and Views. As a longtime area news editor, I know how important it is to get you the news, and we are doing just that in the News and Views. Here is what you will find in our latest edition.
Take a look inside Monterey Abalone, which celebrates its 20th anniversary this month and adds to the tradition of industry on Monterey's wharf. The business has roots that even intertwine with Ed Ricketts, the famed biologist that John Steinbeck fictionalized as Doc Ricketts. Also hear why Assemblyman Louis Alejo's Republican seatmate traveled from Bakersfield to campaign against him, and read what residents and small business owners are saying about Safeway's plan to expand in Aptos. You'll even read the inside scoop on Santa Cruz's decision to pursue an NBA D-League team.
You already know what's on at the movies this week. But if you want to know what your local government is doing, or who is doing all the moving and shaking from Scotts Valley to Carmel Valley, pick up a copy of the Monterey Bay News and Views, available everywhere it matters.
If electricity flows through it, you can save a lot of money by doing it yourself with the help of the experts at Santa Cruz Electronics. Hello, Charlie Friedman here. Listen to the things your friends and neighbors are doing for themselves with the help of Santa Cruz Electronics.
Xbox 360 repair.
Solar energy kits. Musical Tesla coil.
Video output for my home media center.
Building a new server.
Repairing a student radio station.
More RAM and a sound card.
DSL line.
Network printing, scanning, and faxing for dentists.
Replacing antivirus on 12 machines.
Wireless network for court reporter agency.
Diagnosing sound card problem.
Building a 5-kilowatt amplifier.
Ham radio antenna.
If electricity flows through it, you can save a lot of money by doing it yourself with the help of the experts at Santa Cruz Electronics. Voted best electronics store 2 years running. Call Santa Cruz Electronics today at 831-479-5444 or visit at 2808 SoCal Avenue in Santa Cruz. Do it yourself and save money with the help of Santa Cruz Electronics.
Our fraudulent paper.
EIB.
MLB Riot.
They maneuver.
Planned Parenthood. You're the biggest duel of the summer. You're an arrogant snub doing it. An arrogant, full-fledged snub. And you don't know 10% what you think is going to happen. Almost out of the way.
It will soon pass.
Laugh, laugh, laugh.
Don't worry. Be happy.
More positive radio, Sundays at 4.
I'm not worried.
Right here on AM 1080.
KSCO.
I'm happy.
You're listening to KSCO, serving Davenport, Carmel, and Tassajaro Hot Springs.
Nice, Easton. I'm going to be honest. Todd, I've told you this years ago that show, how you guys edit it, the music, the sound effects, the distressed picture kind of flashes you guys do. I believe that there's the location. You guys were the first to do a lot of that stuff, and I'm seeing it copied now, but still not in the same quality as it was that you guys have done.
It's funny, I love that people. You know what tickles me is that everybody, I hear this a lot about how they say, oh yeah, and everybody's copying The Deadliest Catch, and it's just so funny because if you look closely, nobody's copying The Deadliest Catch. It's the same production company with just other shows because, Deadliest Catch, the recipe worked so well that it just translated over into Daxman and shows like that. Well, it's the same production company that produces those shows, so same people.
Yeah, for some reason, it's still not quite as good as watching The Deadliest Catch. And I do. I said this. I know you heard this. I am a big fan of the Bering Sea Gold. I got hooked on that.
Oh, great show!
It is. Is it Scott, the guy that's just he's got the child support payments and hates everybody.
Yeah, oh yeah,
dude, Scott, how amazing is that guy?
I love Scott. He's great. I mean, that's what we need to bring it back to people like that. Keep it real and keep people honest. I mean, everybody's always pussyfooting around everybody these days, and what I appreciated and really actually liked a lot about Scott was that he's just very forward. It's like, it says it like it is.
What did you think of that fight in the wrap-up show?
I never saw that. I wasn't around when that happened. I was out at sea, but I heard about it.
It was awesome. I thought it was awesome that, Vern stepped up and they went at it on TV. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I wish I'd have seen that.
Yeah, you got to watch it. It's so great. And it was really a short season. That was a very short season.
Let's just to back up and sum up a little bit here. This is a Saturday special on KSCO AM 1080, and we got The Deadliest Catch going on here. We have producer Todd Stanley, and Boat Captain Mike Redekop with us. Right now, we got a caller. Bud in Coralitos has a question. You're on KSEO. Bud, what do you got?
Hey, guys.
Welcome aboard.
Hey, how you doing?
I would like to submit to you guys that you could put the Dalai Lama on board with that guy Scott, and the Dalai Lama would be kicking his ass in about 10 minutes.
I don't know. I saw it. Scott was actually pretty gifted with his hands.
No redeemable qualities. Larry.
Doesn't matter. He took care of Vern in about, you know.
He hit Vernon in the face with that mug. Did you see that?
Yeah. He got it done. I'm not going to take anything away from him. He wasn't afraid to get after him. I feel sorry for the Dalai Lama.
Hey, here's to Captain Phil, all right?
Yeah, Captain Phil. Hey,
yeah, man.
Todd, I
know you
understand.
You guys had a close relationship.
I understand you guys were very close. And the Captain Phil thing is just one of the most compelling stories I've seen on TV.
I could not watch it for the longest time after that because I was scared he was going to come on, because it really choked me up when I found out. The guy was a hell of a dude, and here's to him.
Absolutely.
Thank you, guys.
Bill Hurst got me out of crabfish.
Yeah, you know, Phil was a good man, without a doubt. You know, he was very much liked by all people, and, it's hard to believe he's not around.
And that was the boat. You were on that boat for quite a while, correct? Todd?
Yeah, spent, I guess, 3.5 years on there. And, you know, it's funny. But one time, I think I added up, you know, how much time I spent on that boat, and I think I've almost spent a year of my life on that boat.
Todd, you know, I'm really interested in this question. I don't know if you're going to answer it honestly or not, but some of the scenes with Captain Phil, like the camera follows him down into the boat, or it doesn't follow him, but you hear him go down, and where he finds Jake getting into his pain medications or something. I mean, was that off the cuff, or was that set up?
No, not at all. That was very much off the cuff. I mean, that happened as it laid out, you know. These captains, you know, I mean, when you're thrown onto a small boat like that, you know, there's very few places on the boat that are, like, sacred and, like, your place. And, you know, the captain's den, his stateroom is sort of an off-limits place, you know. And so, I mean, I'm one of those people that, you know, I was able to break the barriers there. And, I mean, I'd come into his room all the time. But, you know, there was just certain times when, you know, you you'd stay away. And, Jake definitely, I remember that, following him down there, and I knew it was going to be a big blowout. And for me at the time, you know, as a producer, you're faced with decisions that you have to make on the fly. And that was one of those tough decisions where I felt like I better just hold back here and let this sort of unfold without actually being, you know, in the room.
Right, because all you heard was the two voices coming from down below, and then they came back up top and had a big blowout, and that was a very compelling scene there.
Oh boy, you know, that was something that I was already privy to, and I knew that there was going to be a big conflict at some point. And again, you know, that was definitely on the fly. It happened just like you saw it, and I made the decision to stand down and let it happen.
But record it.
If anybody has any questions for our Deadliest Catch guys here, the pros from Dover from Deadliest Catch are here. This is the phone number to call, 831-479-1080. Let's get some action on the phones for these guys here.
I've got a question about you've been talking about writing a book, and I think you're actively writing this book now, Todd.
Well, yeah, I'm working on a book right now. Yeah, it's been a big work in progress, I'll tell you.
What's it about?
It's just about my experiences with Deadliest Catch, and not just Deadliest Catch, but just my experiences, how I ended up in reality television. Because, you know, I came from broadcast, and things are just different, you know. This is really an exciting, great time to be in television. television, because, you know, a lot of the traditional rules of TV are being broken, and we are, you know, we're doing things that, you know, have never been done before. We're following people with crazy careers, and you know, you end up with so much footage that you have to dwindle, you have to cut it down to fit into these time slots and stuff. There's so much more stories to be told, and so my book is, you know, about my.
Are you referring to the Kardashians?
there's a show I've never seen.
You haven't missed anything yet, so I'll let you know if something exciting happens.
You know, people are very interested in Captain Phil. They want to know more. They want to know what it's like. And I can tell you that we saw very little of Captain Phil and what he's really like. And just sort of course, it'll be in there. You know, I want to talk about what it was like living with him. And I can, you know, it wasn't always easy. In fact, it was probably the most mentally challenging situations I've ever had to live with. You know, I mean, he is not an easy person to live with.
No, and, I wouldn't imagine. It was very complex, a lot going on.
Oh, yeah. So, anyway.
Well, bringing Captain Mike back into the thing here, you were the captain of the Western Viking, right? And you were involved in seasons 1 and 2, is that right?
Yeah, I was on, I think it was just season 1. And it was kind of a weird deal. I had gotten out of Alaska because of the downturn in the seasons, and the seasons getting so short. And we had gotten down here in the Baja and had started working on developing a crab fishery down here. And, you know, there's a lot to it. There's a lot to putting together an entire fishery out of scratch. We had to go find the product offshore first. We had to find the gear that would catch that product once we found that product. Then we had to do a stock assessment so we knew what we could harvest. And there was a lot to putting this whole deal together down here in Mexico.
I imagine you had to pay some officials off too.
Yeah, and so you're running into some cost issues, you know, and trying to keep money together to finance it. And so what I was doing is I was just flying back up to Alaska and doing these select little seasons. And Coleman Anderson, who was actually the captain on board the Western Viking, that first season in the Deadliest Catch, Coleman called me up and he asked me if I'd come up and be a second captain on the boat for a brown crab season. And, you know, we had at that time our fishing permits down here in Mexico were suspended, probably because some freaking political guy had a quinceañera for his daughter or something, needed some cash. So they suspended our permit down here, and I was kind of strapped, and so I jumped at the chance and went up and fished the brown crab with the Western Viking, and that was the season before that red crab season with the Deadliest Catch. And it actually turned out so well, we couldn't believe it, that I think out of 19 boats that fished the Dutch Harbor brown crab season, the Western Viking had always come in number 19th. It had held that position solid for years. And with Coleman and I both as captains on the boat together, I think we finished like in 7th place out of 19. And so we all went home. We all had money. Everything was looking up. And that's when they called me and asked me if I wanted to come up and do a round 2 for the red crab season. Well, I get to Dutch Harbor. I agree to it because supposedly it's going to be the whole same crew and everything that we had during the brown crab season. I get to Dutch Harbor and it's completely different. No, entirely different crew. It's an entirely different fishery, and I'm a better single pot fisherman than a longline pot fisherman, and Coleman is a better longline pot fisherman than I am, and it went really well during the brown crab, but I think we should have had roles reversed a little more during the red crab, and it could have probably turned out to be a little more productive. But what had happened was...
Hold on, we got some calls. Hold on a second. We got some calls stacking up. Let's clear a couple of calls.
Yeah, well, let's...
You need some producing help.
Well, he's restricted with this. He can't...
Speaking of producing, Mike, I got a little message here from the control room. Says, got to watch that language. We're going to bring in... Archie in Santa Cruz, you're on KSCO with the Deadliest Catch Boys. What do you got?
Well, I had a question for these guys. It's one of my most enjoyable programs on this channel. And I was curious as to the type of arrangements the cable company has made or his company has made with the captains of these boats. As you call them, I was in the Navy. I call them ships, but they're not steam powered, so they're boats. So
thanks for clarifying that.
I'm sure they must get.
We want you to know that difference.
Pardon me?
Now then, anyway.
Well, anyhow.
Wait, who are you asking your question to, Archie?
Yeah,
I was asking to these gentlemen that you're speaking to.
What's the arrangements with the captains?
I'm not sure I understand what the question is.
Are the captains compensated by Discovery Channel, or do they have contracts?
Okay.
You know, to be honest with you, I'm not privy to that stuff. But you know, I don't know the answer to that. That's, I mean, these guys are crab fishermen, and we're essentially documenting what they do. But, you know, I know they do have some endorsement deals and things like that that they've managed to drum up on their own, and, you know, and rightfully so. They should.
Yeah, I agree. And one other question concerning...
One more real fast, Archie.
Yeah, concerning seasickness, what is done? Because I know a lot of these greenhorns that show up that get sick, and how can they perform their work when they get sick?
Boy, you know, the ocean and the work doesn't slow down for any sick man. You just have to tough it out through it. And seasickness affects everybody differently. It's really a strange oddity, but I, and Mike will probably agree with me.
Mike, do you get seasick?
Rough bunch of guys.
I've been seasick my whole life.
He does.
I've been seasick since I was 8 years old. And you know what? It's a mental issue.
Is it past the point where Dramamine's going to fix it?
No, Dramamine makes me sicker.
Isn't it true, Mike, that you get your sea legs after you get sick for a couple of days and eventually you just settle in?
Yeah, but you know, most people do. That's what happens to most people is they get sick for a few days and their body kind of adjusts to it, their equilibrium kind of adjusts to it, but... You know, there are a few cases, myself as one. People can't believe that I've spent my life out in the Bering Sea going up and down for all these years, and I've been seasick the whole time. And, I mean, it's just one of those things, you know?
Right.
But I think there was, you know, at least in my case, there were a lot of things that forced me to carry on, you know? And part of that was proving myself to my family, my dad, my grandpa, my uncles, that you know, I was one of the boys, not one of the girls.
All right.
Okay. We're coming up on the top of the hour. We're going to have to go to news here. You guys hang in with us. We have Mike and Aptos. If you have a question, hang with us, and we'll get to you. In the meantime, we're going to get out of here. It's KSCO Saturday Special, AM 1080.
CBS News, I'm Pam Coulter.
President Obama is in South America talking about trade and other issues facing the neighborhood. He said a new environment for cooperation exists in the Americas, and he's serious about expanding trade in the region. But he's shooting down an idea floated by some participants at the Summit of the Americas. CBS's Peter Mayer is traveling with the president.
President Obama has a very direct response to a controversial proposal made by some Latin American leaders increasingly worried about the impact of the drug issue.
Legalization is not the answer.
Some countries at the center of the drug wars believe decriminalization would ease the violence. But Mr. Obama argues that could cause even more corruption. The president says the U.S., the biggest drug demand country, must do more to get its own house in order. Peter Mayer, CBS News, Cartagena, Colombia.
Distracting from the president's trip, some possible misconduct by at least one member of the uniformed Secret Service detail. An entire team was sent home after one agent touched off a scuffle at his hotel involving a woman guest. CBS's Bill Plant in Cartagena.
A Secret Service source says that two of those sent home were supervisors and that the rest were part of a detail assigned to logistics. The Secret Service spokesman says that none of the changes affect the comprehensive security which was prepared for the trip.
After months of battling over what to do about Syria, members of the UN Security Council are finally on the same page. CBS's Pamela Falk at the UN.
The UN Security Council came together to agree to a small group of unarmed observers and authorize a UN supervision mission in Syria to monitor the end of armed violence.
About 30 observers could be sent to Syria within days. The team could eventually grow to 250. German Ambassador Peter Wittig.
So we must remain vigilant. Too many commitments made by Damascus in the past have not been kept.
After a 15-month gap, talks between Iran and six world powers on Tehran's nuclear program have resumed. One European diplomat describes the discussions in Istanbul, Turkey, as constructive. They're battening down the hatches across a wide swath of the nation's midsection. Greg Dial of the Storm Prediction Center says a life-threatening storm system could stretch from Minnesota to Texas.
The storms we expected to form are called supercells. They're capable of producing up to baseball, even larger hail in some cases, damaging wind as well as, you know, strong to violent tornadoes.
Three possible tornadoes have been reported west and north of Oklahoma City. Emergency officials say no injuries have been reported so far. It may be mid-April, but the ski season is still going on in the California mountains. A spring storm hit the southern and central part of the state with rain and fierce winds, and new snow in the mountains prompted closed ski resorts to reopen. This is CBS News.
State Farm Insurance.
Are you the one who bought my husband a Falcon?
Excuse me?
You saved my husband over $480 by switching to State Farm, and he bought a Falcon with it.
How awesome is that?
We can't control what our customers do with their savings.
Stop buying him frivolous things.
What do you want me to do?
Buy me frivolous things.
Save an average of $480 when you switch your auto policy to State Farm. Get to a better state. Call 1-800-STATE-FARM today. Average household savings based on 2010 National Survey of New Policyholders reported savings by switching to State Farm.
At Advance Auto Parts, we don't do anything just part way. We go full throttle. We won't just sell you some oil. Oh, no. We'll sell you a 5-plus quarts jug of Castrol GTX conventional motor oil and a DriveWorks filter for just $19.99. Plus, you walk out of Advance with a free John Force racing hat valued at $20. A free $20 hat? You're only paying $19.99 for oil. What gives? Actually, Advance does.
Advance Auto Parts.
See store for details.
Russia's famed Bolshoi Ballet Academy is graduating its first American, a Texas teenager.
As a teenager, Joy Womack convinced her family in Austin, Texas, to allow her to move all the way to Moscow to live and learn at the most prestigious ballet academy in the world. On the brink of graduation, she says all this talk of making history is exciting.
People aren't very interested in ballet, and so when it makes this kind of a story, it's great. Not only, you know, for me personally, but for our art form in the general sense.
Speaking via Skype, Womack says it's a lot of pressure. After graduation, she hopes to come back to America to breathe some life into the art form. Michael Board for CBS News, San Antonio.
They're celebrating the King of the Jungle in Morgan City, Louisiana this weekend. That's where the first Tarzan movie was made in 1917. The Tarzan Festival features, of course, a Tarzan yelling contest. Pam Coulter, CBS News.
portion of programming on KSCO is brought to you in part by RV Service Center of Santa Cruz, your locally owned RV parts and repair center in Santa Cruz. RV Service Center specializes in all RV insurance repairs and now offers service rebates equal to your insurance deductible. It's like you pay nothing. At RV Service Center, 2525 Mission, Santa Cruz, a proud member of Think Local First.
Good morning, good almost afternoon. This is AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz. It's 5 minutes after 11 a.m. on this Saturday, April 14th, 2012. I'm Easton Allen with an update on your Central Coast roadways and your Central Coast weather. Have an accident in the Monterey County area, in the Salinas area. Highway 101 southbound near Chular River Road. Have an accident there. Vehicles facing the wrong way, and it's partially in the roadway. 475-1080 is the number to call with your traffic tips. Your Central Coast weather for today, partly cloudy. Highs in the mid to upper 60s. Winds from the northwest at 10 to 20 miles per hour. Your forecast for tonight, partly cloudy, lows in the 40s. Northwest winds at 5 to 10 miles per hour tonight. Coming up next on KSCO, we have hour number two of the Saturday special. Sitting in for VMZ is Sam Quinton and Scott Gold.
I guess
I'm a throwback. He's rolling his eyes at me. I love that voice, man. It does something to me. I don't know what it is, but it does something.
Welcome back to the second hour of the Saturday special on KSEO AM 1080. I'm Sam Quinton with Scott Gold, and it's all about the deadliest catch today. And we have producer Todd Stanley.
We've got a limited time here. We got to get
limited
you guys.
Limited time
with Todd and Mike. They got to get going. They can't spend all day on here.
Well, let's... You want to get back to Mike on something, right?
Mike, you were trying to comment earlier, the caller. Are you there, Mike?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, he was commenting on the salaries and the pay and that, and you were trying to say something. They stepped over you. There's endorsement deals and that, and you were trying to – what was your comment on that?
Well, you know, I know that when we when they presented it to us, the Discovery Channel gave us all a waiver to sign and whatnot, and it was all about them. It was nothing for the crews or the captains. The boat owners were set up, but no, the five boats that fished that first season, it was set up to as a competition that whoever had the most crab at the end of that season, which coincidentally was the last open access season that the Bering Sea ever had. That was the last season of open access before crab rationalization, what a word. And what it was set up as a competition. The winner takes all. It was a $250,000 bonus, but it's like a $250,000 win in Vegas, where I mean the IRS gets a cut of that. The owners at that point had to decide whether they were going to keep all the money or they were going to share it out to their crews or they were going to give their crews any part of it, because in all actuality they didn't have to. So I think, you know, from my understanding and being involved in the actual negotiation of that, you know, there's no compensation by the Discovery Channel on any of that in part of the captains and crews. But now
it is all kind of changed. You know, I talked to Phil about it quite a bit. Ricky Kwasnick, you know, all these guys are real good friends of mine and have been for years. And, you know, there were endorsement deals that changed as the program grew, but endorsement deals for the captains. There were shows and stuff that they could make a little bit of income. But anything that was sold was still 80% going to Discovery Channel. So, you know, a lot of these guys, at least in the inception of the program, everybody was doing it to be on TV. But, hey, I, Scott, I enjoy this. I'm grateful to be on the program. I love you. I love Todd. You guys are great. And looking forward to seeing both of you. But I got to really run here today. I'm trying to get my truck fixed. I got a bunch of crap going on, and so I'm going to have to bail out on
good
you.
Good choice of words there. Good job. I got to commend you on that.
Okay. Well, Mike, right, it's Mike, been great having you.
Let's get the next caller.
All right. Let's bring in a caller. We have Mike from Aptos, and you're on KSCO, Mike.
Yes, my question is, since the airing of the program, has it been easier to find labor to get people on the boat?
That's a good question.
Labor-wise?
I'm still with you. I'll take that one.
Mike's still here. Yeah, I thought you had a lot of crap to do there, Mike.
Yeah. A lot of crab to do.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
Hey, somebody send me a steering box for an F-250 Ford and get it here today, and I'll stay here until the cows come home.
First on race day, Fords go forever.
That's right on.
No, come on.
Yeah, they do. They're the best.
Settle down. You know how many times I've had to go down and help him get his Ford running again?
Yeah, Mike is one thing that stands out in my mind about Mike I'll never forget is when we got back from that first crab season and we hit the dock and we had to wait on anchor before we could offload. And sometimes you had to wait sometimes several days, but there was nothing to do except sit around and drink beer. And I went to town and brought back a bunch of beer. And the first thing Coleman Anderson did, the captain, he grabbed all that beer and he said, "No way." He's like, "We got Mike Redekop on board here, and there's no way you're going to turn loose all this beer with him around."
That's the first time I ever met him. We were having a beer.
You think he's hard to control right now? Oh, boy, get some beers in that boy.
Yeah, that brings me to a question I'll hold off for a little while on. Mike in Aptos, though, was asking Mike Redekop about the labor pool, and how do you go about getting your labor on the boat, the deckhands and the greenhorns and stuff? What do you say on that?
You know what? Here's what's going on. Everybody sees that show. They think they can do it. The guys show up, beat the docks. I mean, our crews, our crab fishing crews are getting older. They're getting out of it. They're just, I mean, you know, the whole dynamic of it changed. But basically, the labor pool anymore, I'm afraid to hire. I'll tell you right now, I got Mexicans, Guatemalans that are working for me right now. And I love those guys because they don't complain. They don't try to get hurt. They don't sue me. They do their job. They're grateful to have it. And they work hard. And I wish that our American labor pool would guys could honor what they say when they come and ask for a job, know that they're going right into the teeth of the dragon and just not back down. You know,
I've got to add something to that. I've sent no less than probably five or six people out of here that wanted to do it. I introduced them to Mike and, you know, get some jobs. Not one of them has ever completed a season.
Never.
Not
never,
one. Toughest and I'll do this. And they, you hear all that.
I got to comment on this too, because I got to say, it's I don't know what it is. I'm still trying to figure it out. But it's like Mike said, everybody wants. And here's where I have a problem. This is what they say. They say, boy, I sure would like to try that. Well, guess what, buddy? You don't try anything. You come up there and you do it. And you can
read it.
And the other thing is that, and that goes for the camera crew too, because that's really sort of, it falls over onto the camera crews now. We have such high turnover on the show. And because it is a number one hit show, we have a lot of cameramen that want to come up and try it too. And it's just, you know, the show is nominated continually now every year for an Emmy. And so you get these guys that want to come up, and that's all they want to do. They want to come up and try it for a season so they can get nominated for an Emmy. And it's really starting to bother me.
It's my business. It's how I make a living, and it has been since I was a kid. And, you know, for somebody to come in and try it, you know, I want commitments.
You got no time for that, huh?
That's exactly right. Thank you very much.
The problem today is, as Americans, we set ourselves up for failure. I mean, society is setting itself up for failure. Try. What is try? Try. You either do something or you don't do it. And if you try...
Don't get too hot, because you start swearing when you start losing control there.
Yeah, exactly.
Got to reel them back in. So, but one thing that has happened, what I've heard...
Mike in Aptos, thank you very much for your call.
What I have heard is that there's a ton of people that are traveling up there and trying to get a job. They're trying to get on a boat. And it's just, I heard, you know, from Mike and different people that there is a lot of people going up there. And, you know, I imagine after this bearing... Sea Gold program, there's going to be Nome's going to be flooded if it isn't already.
Yeah. Well, everybody's looking for that fast buck, and they see it on TV, and they go, wow, those guys are making all that money. But what they don't realize is that these guys aren't just making that money. They live on that boat 9 to 12 months out of the year, and that crab boat doesn't just crab fish, but they go on and they tender, or they do herring, or whatever it is else they do. And that's where the part that comes in where they realize, they go, oh, wow, well, I don't want to do that. It's like, well, that's a full-time job. If you get hired on one of those boats, that's the career choice you're making. And yeah, quite frankly, they don't last.
What about the Nome, Alaska thing and the Bering Sea Gold? Are you going to do that program again this summer?
Ricardo,
no, I'm not sure what's going on with that one. I think it's going to come back.
I've actually heard even people talking about it and saying that they'd like to go up there, and I was like, oh my God, do you even have any clue?
Home,
yeah.
Me.
Yes, dude, that's brutal. Home. Brutal.
There's not any room for them to begin with, so they'd be wasting their money even going up.
I can imagine there's going to be an influx of them up there too, and I think some of these shows, personally, I can, and I know Mike will probably chime in on this, but I think it ruins some of the, for instance, let's use Storage Wars. I talked to a guy in Palmdale. And we had broken down, one of our trucks broke down. We were getting a trailer from this guy, and he told me that he has auctions now where over 100 people show up. They get $2,000 to $3,000 on lockers. They used to get $25. Three people would show up, and there's nothing in them. Because of that show, everyone's flooding these markets, and the guys that used to, you know, make some decent money on these things, it's over. They can't do it. They've all left that whole scene.
Well, you know, you can see the economy's down. There's a lot of people without jobs, and, you know, they get a lot of time to watch TV, I guess.
I know it's easier to show up to a storage locker, but compared to, like, going up and crab fishing, you know, even buying a ticket and doing that, there's a little bit more to it, but, you know.
Big difference there.
Huge difference. Let's take a break real quick.
Yeah, we're going to take another break. You're listening to the Saturday Special.
We'll be right
on
back.
On KSEO AM 1080. We got Todd Stanley. And, Mike, are you going to hang with us a little bit? Mike's not hanging with us.
Okay. He is. I hear the background noise.
We're going to go to break right now. We'll be back in a few.
Spring is just around the corner, which means it's time to get your RV and trailers ready to roll. Hi, I'm Rena Mills of RV Service Center of Santa Cruz, your locally owned RV parts and repair center with over 36 years of service to the Central Coast community. In addition to RV repairs, our qualified staff services and maintains boat, horse, and utility trailers and toy haulers. We also restore vintage RVs and work hand-in-hand with all insurance companies to ensure your RV is restored to its original condition. Get your RV and trailers ready to roll into spring with the help of your friends at RV Service Center. You'll find us easy to reach and easy to use at 2525 Mission Street, cross street of Mission and Swift in Santa Cruz. 831-427-0881. Again, 427-0881. Or you can email us at rvscsc.com.
Reach for the sky. Hello, I'm Chris Gallardi of Specialized Aviation at the Watsonville and Monterey airports. You can reach for the sky in one of Specialized Aviation's airplanes or helicopters. And it will be so easy, you'll wonder why you waited so long to fly.
Hello, I'm Mary McDonald. I'm an aerobatic pilot here at Specialized Aviation. Join us at the Watsonville Aviation Thrill Center for all kinds of extreme flying fun. I'm talking aerobatics from 3,000 feet, where you loop, roll, spin, and dance over the Monterey Bay, or a graceful helicopter tour for that over-the-top view of all the magic the beautiful Monterey Bay has to offer, or take on the adventure and challenge of learning to fly a helicopter or an airplane, or jump out of an airplane and free fall from 14,000 feet. It's all here, and at prices starting at only $33.
Specialized Aviation at the Watsonville and Monterey airports, 831-763-2244, or sphelly.com.
Omega Nu of Santa Cruz will hold its 22nd annual Ducky Derby and Carnival at Harvey West Park on Saturday, April 28th from 10:30 to 3:30. Admission is free and the event will be held rain or shine. Please join us for a fun-filled day at Ducky Derby with the entire family. There will be delicious food, carnival games, music, and entertainment. And 100% of our proceeds raised go back to our community via local charities and scholarships through Omega Nu. Call the Ducky Derby hotline at 479-4070 or visit our website at www.duckyderbysantacruz.com for more information.
KSCO AM 1080.
Wow.
Yeah, we're sailing away. Yeah, so, we're going crabbing right now is what we're doing. This is Sam Quinton and Scott Gold. You're listening to the Saturday Special, and we got the pros from Dover, and it's all about the deadliest catch today. Let's bring Todd back in. And Mike, we got you there still?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm on the road. I'm heading for the border.
Yeah, run for the border, huh?
Hey, so that was a question we had in between our break here. Is, and both of you guys probably are familiar with this. As far as going out to sea, Mike and Todd, you'll be able to chime in on this. But as far as beer and any type of controlled substance on the boat during a fishing season, as far as I was concerned, is taboo. Is that correct?
Oh yeah, it really is, and it has to be that way anymore because it's just, I mean, we can lose the boats as owners of the boats. We can lose the boats. There's so many. I mean, it's so litigious today's society. It's just you can't afford to lose everything you got by allowing alcohol or drugs or anything.
Even medicinal marijuana?
Yeah. Even medicinal marijuana, you know. Unfortunately, I haven't had to address that. But, you know, that's been one of my fears, that I'm going to have a crew member come up to me and tell me he's got medicinal marijuana and that he has to take it. And I'm not sure how I'm going to be able to handle that. Other than in the eyes of the United States Coast Guard, I'm going to have to terminate him.
Do they take drug tests prior to, you know, coming on the crew?
You know, there's so many ways to get around drug tests, but what we've done is we've set up a deal with a hospital in Seattle that we random drug test guys throughout the season. Our bunks are numbered on the boats. Every month they send us a letter and tell us that they want a urine sample from bunk number X, whatever. And then it's that guy's turn. We do a pre-employment drug screen, and we do a post-employment drug screen. Because the issue there is guys say, well, you can't tell me what I can do on my own time. And granted, you know, when they're not on the boat, hey, it's, they can, hey, knock yourself out. But when they come on the boat and they start being employed by the boat and become my responsibility as crew members aboard, then they've got to stick to my rules. And so a pre-employment drug screening, you know, if a guy fails because he's smoked some pot or he's done whatever his choice is.
Booger sugar.
He can say, well, I did that, but I'm not doing it anymore. That gets him by. But that post-employment drug screen is really important. It clarifies whether they've been doing drugs on the boat or not. And, you know, he stands to lose 80% of his entire paycheck, and with the government taking 30% of his paycheck, I mean, he's coming up short.
You come up broke in that circumstance.
He owes 10%, according to your math.
Yeah.
80 and 30, I mean, what's 110?
That covers that. Hey, let me throw out the number here. It is 831-479-1080. If you got a question for the Deadliest Catch Boys, give us a call, man. We want to.
I've got a quick.
We
want to
hear some more fish
Todd.
Stories, so give us a call. Go ahead.
What's up next, Todd? I know that you and your brother Doug kind of started this together, and he's doing a 3D studio. And what are you doing? What do you plan on doing now? Do you have any?
So there's an awful lot of job opportunities out there right now. Yeah, you know, working. My brother's not just doing 3D. He's developing TV shows. He's got a lot of shows in the works right now. And so, you know,
he's actually built a 3D studio, correct?
Hey, Todd, I think he should do a show about Scott Gold.
Oh, God.
Like a Bronco Basura roadshow or something.
I think that's a pretty good idea there, Mike. The
you
adventures
know,
of Bronco Basura.
Everybody's got a TV show idea, you know. It's one thing but to have an idea, but to, like, execute it and actually get it all the way to air, oh, boy, that's a whole challenge in itself.
Bringing it to fruition. You got to beg, borrow, and steal.
Easy thing to do.
Yeah, but you're the man, though. You can pull that off.
Oh, yeah. We are pulling it off. We're doing it.
Yeah.
So,
but back to the... I know the industry's changing. That's why I'm bringing up your brother in the 3D studio. And what he's up to, because I have a feeling that that's kind of where TV's heading to some degree. I know that I did just take a trip to the Best Buy, and they're pushing the 3D TV thing really hard. And I know your brother's pushing more and more into the 3D stuff.
Yeah, you know, I mean, for me to comment on the 3D thing, I will just say that, you know, Mike, turn your phone on me, buddy.
What's he's that? Got some wind noise going, Mike.
Yeah. Mike, your phone's making a lot of noise there.
Okay.
There you go.
Go ahead, Todd.
Well, I was just going to say, yeah, like Scott was saying, it seems to be that 3D is becoming more and more popular. You know, it's been around for a very long time. The technology has certainly got a lot better. But like you were saying, Scott, you know, you start seeing these 3D TVs and everything. I don't know. My personal feeling on 3D is that it's a novelty and sure it's neat to see a 3D movie, but I'm not very interested in it myself.
There you go.
Okay,
we got Mike potted down for a second.
His mic off.
And I'm with you on that. I'm 100% behind you, and that's why I'm bringing it up. I see that stuff. I see. To me, I can't watch it, and it's hard. It's hard. I you know, basically, I've tried a couple times and end up with a headache watching the 3D stuff, and I don't see the appeal to it. But I know the industry is moving in that direction.
And the answer to that is, you know, everybody who's into it, you know, it's like there's a lot of really poorly shot 3D that will do that. But, you know, just even the very best 3D, I don't know. It's just you got to wear glasses, and that in itself is annoying to me. I mean, if it were to the point where you didn't have to wear glasses and you could just watch 3D, I think it would probably be different. I might feel differently about it.
Yeah, so we aren't going to see a 3D Deadliest Catch here.
So, Todd, let's see if we can bring Mike back in here. We had a caller on the line, but I guess he didn't want to go on. But he wanted to know how the food was on the boat and how is that arranged? Who's the cook? How good is the food? That sort of stuff.
No, the food's all over the place.
The food's all over the place?
The food is the last priority on the boat. You know, it's sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not. Who's the cook? Well, that's most of the boats. They'll say you'll start a season out and you'll have a designated cook, but he almost never will cook, and so everybody sort of lends a hand. And every once a week or every once a couple weeks, somebody will put a meal out. But for the most part, you're on your own.
Well, if you're on a crab boat, are you eating a lot of king crab while you're out crabbing?
Hell no. Everybody thinks that, too. Oh, you must eat a lot of crab now. Shoot. That almost never happens.
Yeah, I know. That's our money. Why do we can eat when we get home.
Don't get high off your own supply.
Yeah.
That's right. So, we learned that from Scarface.
typically, what is the food like? What are you eating? Just eggs and eggs and bacon and burgers.
Try to eat a lot of carbs. One thing that we always go back to is, I mean for myself, my dad always said that, you know, you can't save a trip on the fuel bill or the grocery bill or the bait bill. You know, you got to have the best bait you can have. You got to feed those crabs to get them into the pot. You got to feed your crew to demand the work out of them. But there's a line that gets crossed, and it usually crosses at about 35 or to 40 hours. You know, food becomes irrelevant to what's going on. Guys throw shit in the hot pockets and stuff in the microwave and just eat on the fly. The meals, I mean, there are some guys out there in the crab fleet that are good cooks, and they can throw on a great meal. But to have a good meal, you gotta have – there's a lot of things have to align. Your fishing's got to be good. Because if you're not on good fishing, then you're working to try to get on good fishing. Food falls, the groceries and the meals fall to the back of the line. The weather's got to be good. Otherwise, just like Todd said, the food's all over the place, literally. And, you know, if you've got good fishing, then you've got to have time. Because when you've got good fishing, you're trying to, you know, fill the boat up or meet your delivery date or whatever. And so you've got there's a lot of things got to align to have a good meal on a boat during a crab season. And it almost never does. And that's it in a nutshell.
All right. Well, that straightens that out.
Pop-Tarts and Hot Pockets.
Hot Pockets. Oh, my goodness.
No wonder he's got to take 10 days to unwind when he gets off there.
I think I lose about 10, 15 pounds at least every time I go out.
Well, I've eaten up at your house, and it's quite amazing. You know, the meals that I've had up there are pretty good. So.
I like to eat. So, yeah. But eating is non-existent on a crab boat.
you know, yeah. He's got like a chef up there cooking meals for him. I'm surprised you don't take that guy with you on the boat just to feed you.
Hey, I wish you could. How about when you come down to my house, Scott? You eat pretty good down there.
Well, what he's referring to, I believe, is called a tuna jello, which I can't even begin to explain how bad that is. Just the sound of it.
Weenie cream.
Yes. It's so gross, and no disrespect to your, I believe it's your ex-wife now, but she puts out this big ball. It's like a jello ball, but it's called tuna jello, and I don't know why anybody would ever create such a horrific thing. Why? And she can't help but always make it when we go down there, and I'm like, just please tell her when I'm gone that it's...
You like it.
No, I don't. And that's because of our other friend Jim that continues to have second, third helpings just to make her happy. And it's like, why would you do that? I mean, we're deep frying lobster down there. We're having chocolate clams sauteed on a big open wok. We're having abalone. We ate 39 pounds of lobster, I think, the last time we were down there. And then here comes this big plate of tuna jello. What is that thing? It looks like a alien's brain.
What does not belong in this group?
Yes. Please, Mike.
Hey, we got another caller on the line. Jen in San Lorenzo Valley. You're on the Saturday special on KSCO with the Deadliest Catch. Jen, what you got?
Oh, well, first I want to say, are you guys crazy?
You get that idea, do you?
Well,
I believe you're talking to them, not us, right?
How long are you out on each fishing expedition?
Boy, the fishing is it just varies from year to year. It depends on the season and how long. Mike has got to turn that phone off because it's just so
pot him down.
Okay, I brought him down for a second. Go ahead, Todd.
Where were we? Your question.
How long you go out? How long are you out for?
You know, we go out from anywhere from 2 to 3 months at a time. But we're out at sea for 10, 12 days maximum, and come in and offload and go back out and do it all over again.
I see. My main question is I'd like to know any secrets of how you deal with the cold and the wet.
Well, it's like anything. You just you layer up, and you have multiple sets of clothing. And when one set gets wet, you run in and you change into a dry set, and you go back out and do it all over again. So, it's not too bad, but a lot of changing going on.
Combined with the camera equipment and all that, you have to deal with that, which is an added element that has got to be just a nightmare.
It's a constant nightmare. It really is.
How big is your personal area, your space, that you can deal with all this multiple clothing, keeping track of your food?
It just varies from boat to boat. A lot of the boats are all different lengths and sizes, and the living quarters and the house are all different. I had it made when I was on the Cornelia Marie, because the house was a three-story house, and the entire second floor was shared by me and Phil. We had the whole place to ourselves, and I had lots of room there. I had my own galley table and a television and a surround sound and a place to when there was a chance to relax. But, on the other boats, like the Ramblin' Rose, I was on that boat, and I didn't even have a room. I lived below the wheelhouse. I had a tiny crawl space. I had to crawl underneath the floorboards and... amongst all the electronics and wiring and everything. It just depends on what boat you're on,
Yeah.
Like a little hobbit.
The Northwestern, the guy is one of the producers, is sleeping on cans of food in the bow because there's just no room for him.
Wow.
So it just depends.
Do you guys use things like hand warmers and stuff like that?
We've tried the hand warmers and stuff, but they don't work. They're more of a pain to change out your hand warmers, you sort of just learn to just tough it out and not worry about the pain.
Yeah, okay. I grew up with five brothers, so I know that guys just love to get out there and do this stuff. I think you guys are just adrenaline junkies, aren't you?
Well, absolutely. I mean, it is, you know, a good dose of adrenaline that keeps you alive and going,
yeah,
without a doubt.
Well, you plan to do this all your life?
You know, I sort of don't live my life with much of a plan. just thinking along, and you know, it's people ask me all the time. You know, it used to be like I'd be home and they'd say, "Well, how long are you going to be gone for?" You know, and now I come home and they say, "When are you leaving again?"
Hey, Jan, thanks for your call. We got to run to a break. Todd, hang in there with us, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
Yes, it is loud. It is raucous. It is fun. So get up and go for it. Take the family. Take friends. Take the entire neighborhood to the rip-roaring racing fun at Ocean Speedway in Watsonville.
Get lucky Friday night for Ocean Sprints 2, brought to you by Taco Bravo. We're racing 360 sprint cars, four bangers, American stock, sport mods, and wingless sprints. Adults $17, seniors $15, kids $13, or get the entire family in for only $55. Get lucky for the Friday the 13th races.
Ocean Speedway is located at the Santa Cruz County Fairgrounds, just 2 miles east of downtown Watsonville on Highway 152. Get up and go for the loud, raucous, rip-roaring racing fun this Friday night at Ocean Speedway.
Hi, I'm Brent Edwards, and I invite you to be a part of a wonderful program returning to Santa Cruz. Amazing Surf Adventures is hosting their annual fundraiser in support of Operation Surf, a recreational and rehabilitative surf experience for active duty military recently wounded in Iraq and Afghanistan. We invite you to golf for the soldiers. De La Viega Golf Course will be hosting a four-person team tournament April 19th. Also, April 23rd, there will be a meet and greet for soldiers at the Coconut Grove, Hawaiian music and hula dance, dinner, live silent auction, emceed by Michael Olson, a Navy vet. So get your dancing shoes on and come and greet Wounded Heroes, April 23rd at the Coconut Grove. For more information on the golf tournament and the meet and greet, call 818-7225. That's 818-7225, or go to AmazingSurfAdventures.org. And don't forget to come out and watch these brave men and women take on the waves at Cowles Beach in Santa Cruz, April 23rd through the 28th, and witness this amazing experience. Thank you.
Don't miss the next Perspectives.
Virtually all cancers are all substantially increased when you're vitamin D deficient.
Every Saturday from 12 noon to 1 o'clock.
You've tuned in to the Perspectives Radio Show. My name is Donald Davidson. I'm your host, and joining me in the studio as special guest host is Dr. Stan.
Join Donald Davidson, Dr. Stanley Monteith, Dr. David Biles, Tom Quinn, and others. Perspectives every Saturday from 12 noon to 1 o'clock on KSCO.
There ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. When I hear that trumpet sound.
I hear that. There ain't no grave that can hold my body down.
You are listening to the Saturday Special on KSCO AM 1080. I'm Sam Quentin with Scott Gold, and we are talking with producer Todd Stanley of The Deadliest Catch. We also have Mike Redekop with us. We bring his microphone up and see if it's making a lot of noise.
He's near the border. He's going to be there for hours on a Saturday.
We'll just pot him down.
He's heading towards, and I imagine, San Ysidro. We'll be sitting there for 2 hours minimum to get over the border to go get a steering equipment.
We have another caller on the line. We want to finish out the last 15 minutes of this show by taking your calls for Todd Stanley. The number here is 831-479-1080. And right now, Dan, you're on KSCO. What do you got?
Yeah, good morning. Great show. Your last caller kind of prompted me to think about something here. I just finished reading Richard Henry Dana's 2 Year Before the Math. Have you ever read that?
No.
No.
About the sailing ship off the coast of California in the 1800s.
Not familiar with that.
No. Reading is actually a second language
to
me.
It's classic, and it really illustrated to me the, you know, the tremendous dangers and the stuff they went through. And I just wondered how that compares to what you're doing there, if you had read it. It's an incredible read. You know, how they'd be flying during these horrible storms and, you know, with there was no Columbia and North Face gear in those days.
No kidding. Well, I'll tell you what, you know, the only thing that comes close to, like, comparing, you know, stories from the past would be, you know, this whole last season would have been me, you know, comparing this season of Deadliest Catch to, like, you know, the Ernest Shackleton expedition, if you're familiar with that. Those
that
guys
was
were,
one I could do. That pretty much says it. That's pretty brutal. That Shackleton voyage is just, how did they all live? That's incredible.
It really is an amazing story.
So the captain, Shackleton, was the leader, you know, and I guess that brings up a question of, the captain is God on the boat, right?
That's a good question for Mike.
The captain is right.
God on the boat, he said.
Oh, yeah, very much so. Yeah.
Hey, Mike? Mike, we got you there?
Yeah. I'm here. You're going to get a little wind noise here, but, both on a democracy. What the captain says goes. And that's another issue, you know. I mean, we get crewmen that come on that they want to voice their opinion. They want to utilize their ideas. They want this and that and the other thing. And, you know, myself.
One person has to be in charge.
I think that goes across anywhere, personally.
Exactly.
Which is funny. I have to chime in here, but I know Mike really well, and I, you know, even when he's off the boat, he considers himself God, which is interesting. You know, he keeps that whole thing going. He doesn't just turn it off. I'll beep him with my voice there. when he steps off the boat, it doesn't end. It just continues. It's, you know, it's funny.
Dan, thanks for your call. Give us a call. We got a few more minutes left. 831-479-1080. So, being a dictatorship, how do you get guys to work like 70 hours in a row without you know, hitting the rack?
Well, here's what happened, and it's a real case study in psychology. But what you got to do is you got to take each one of your crew members right to the brink of complete mental breakdown. And it's not so much these days with the rationalization and stuff, because you got time, you know, as opposed to before when it was open access. You got time to catch your crab. You got time to sleep. You got time to eat, you know, for the most part. And I know Todd understands what I'm talking about, and it's really hard. It's a hard thing for everybody to get their head around. But back in the open access, you had to take each one of your guys to the brink of a complete mental breakdown, and then just so you understand where all your guys' thresholds are. And once you get them to that point, I mean, you got men that are just, I mean, outstanding in every aspect. I mean, they're mentally strong. They're physically strong.
God, I have to say, I wish I was on a boat with you, because you would never be able to find my mental breakdown point.
I would have you in frickin' tears if you know that.
I don't know that, actually. We got a caller.
Next caller.
Okay, Margaret in Santa Cruz, you're on the Saturday special. Margaret, what do you got?
Hi, I was just wondering if you ever did a show near Fukushima, Japan, and if you've noticed or heard, how is the fishing there? And say, Somalia.
Are you talking about funding us to go over and do a show there? That would be great.
I'm just wondering about the nuclear fallout, if the fish are harmed, and what's going on with the fishing industry there.
Well, I think Todd can probably answer that. They had some glowing crab here this last winter.
Glowing.
You know, that's something that was like a real political thing here.
Yeah, so are they doing any shows over there, Todd, that you know of?
The only show I can think that even mentions Japan is that Whale Wars.
Oh, yeah.
But no, I don't know anything about that.
You're not involved in that show?
No, I'm not.
All right. Yeah, they might want to keep that on the down low. Is it? We're talking to Janet?
Margaret,
they might want to keep that on the down low. You know, you don't want to expose too much. Just like this BP oil spill in the Gulf, get it off the radar. Don't have anybody talking about it. You know, the oil just dissipated and disappeared somehow. I've talked to guys that were working that cleanup, and they said that most of the areas were restricted by press where they were cleaning up, and they were trying to burn off what they could burn off. And he said, you know, they just don't want to talk about it.
How do we know if the fish that we're buying in the stores isn't from the waters of Fukushima or Somalia?
You know, what's interesting is it might be good invention to have this little radiation meter tester for fish or something, and can make a bunch of money on that, you know, that you just, you know, like a little, like you check your hot tub, you dip it, that little card in there, and you check to see how much chlorine's in it. You just touch the fish with it, and it says too much radioactivity, don't eat it.
That's a good question. I actually just learned this, only I can't recall the organization, but I was recently, a while back, I should say, I was in San Francisco at one of the museums down there, and they had a little card that actually addressed questions like that, and there's some organizations out there that certify, kind of like, you know, you have an organic, certified organic, and there are organizations that you can actually find out where that fish comes from, and you know, they were educating people and explaining how, you know, to stay away from certain kinds of fish like Chilean sea bass. I had no idea was pretty near extinction, I guess. I don't know, but
very good too. I've actually had Chilean.
I was like, man, I love Chilean.
I know.
I didn't realize that it was in danger. So anyway,
yeah, Margaret, thank you for your call. We got another caller on the line here. It's Rory in Watsonville. Rory, you're on the Saturday special. What do you got?
Hey, thanks. You know, it sounds like a military operation on these fishing boats, which isn't surprising. I've known some people in that business. How many people do you get drifting over from, like, former merchant marine that don't want to do that anymore, even retired Navy that want to go out and make a lot of bucks quick? You get many ex-swabbies from the Navy?
No, not really from the Navy. Really not any military folks at all, really.
No merchant marine or anything.
Huh? I know Mike recently, or maybe a season ago or so, had a guy that was ex-Navy, but it was ex-Navy like 20 years ago. And I think that's how he got the job.
Okay,
Scott sent me an ex-Navy guy. And, you know, he was good. He was good. But, you know, there again, just not... I think he lacked the mental capacity to endure what we actually were enduring through the winter up there. And you know.
I think Rory might be onto something, though, Mike. You get them fresher out of the Navy, and they understand the pecking order and the work ethic, all that. That's not a bad idea to start recruiting these guys right out of the services.
Well, you know, I mean, you can look back on the Deadliest Catch. There was that one Nate, they had a Navy SEAL guy on the Fierce Allegiance that one year in the program.
That's right.
I mean, he was having all sorts of problems.
You know, he couldn't have. He was eating raw liver because his grandmother, or I don't even know, but he's absolutely.
Oh,
that guy
got
it.
It was like a scene out of Apocalypse Now.
It's like you're not. It's one of those things that you just can't really prepare for. You just sort of need to have the mental preparedness to find some completion in it, but. The ocean will break an average man, and you need to figure out how to, when you get broke, and pick yourself up and get back to work.
I'm thinking of that show that's on where they brought it back where they send these, you know, young youths into prison. It's, I think, Scared Straight 2 or...
Right.
Man,
right.
Why aren't we shipping people up there, you know? And
half
put them on a
I like that. Yeah, and really show
I'm
them.
I'm liking what, that.
Let them look down the eye of death.
That's great.
Yeah, I mean, where are you going to run? It's like being on Alcatraz when, you know, no one was swimming out of there.
Hey, I got a 19-year-old I could send you. Maybe you can break them in for me.
You got a what?
I said I got a 19-year-old I can send you.
Oh, dude, who doesn't have a 19-year-old that has a poor work ethic? Come on, I've got one, too. God, I mean, I just need to find a way to trick him to get him up there, and then once he's there, there's no money to come back.
He's gonna have to work to get his way home, right?
Oh, God, you're a genius. I forgot about my 19-year-old.
Rory, we want to thank you for your call, by the way. Let's see if we can throw the number out here one more time. It's 831-479-1080. We got the Deadliest Catch going on here and a couple more minutes left. If you want to chime in, give us a call.
It sounds like, have you made it to the border yet, Mike?
No, I'm going past Puerto Salina right now.
Okay.
Mission Beach.
You going up to Otay Mesa, or are you going to try to... go through San Ysidro?
You know, I think I'm going to just go right to San Ysidro and get across there.
Good luck to you.
Steering box by 3, so thanks, Scott. It was fun. Todd, I hope to hear from you soon. It was great being on with you guys.
Right on.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
See you again.
Thanks a lot. We're going to say goodbye to Mike, bring him down. This is a lot of noise in the background. Thanks for being on the show, though, Mike. Appreciate having you.
All
right. Again, so you have no plans yet for what you're going to do. You're just going to wing it here. And I know that you say the same thing every season.
Plans, but I'm not going to discuss them right now on radio, okay?
Every season you say the same thing. I don't know what I'm going to do. I just don't know right now.
I don't say that, Scott. What I say is what I'm telling you now. You can't just jump on the next thing that comes along, you know, and that's sort of where I am right now. You know, I'm in a position these days that, you know, I'm not going to just jump on the next piece of work that I got just because it's there. I want to get on something, you know, that I believe in and I just right now what I believe in is taking a break. And that's what I'm doing.
When was the last time you actually had time off between projects?
Last time I had time off? My goodness.
Well, when you just decided you're between projects.
September.
Yeah.
Back at the Emmys, during the Emmys. Yeah, that was, I took some time off, went down there for that.
Well, you know, we are coming up on the top of the hour. I am so sad that this is... coming to an end. Todd, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. Love the show. Love your work. And, geez, we should do this some other time and just keep it going.
I think it'd be great. Yeah, and I'd like to just mention, throw it out there, too, if anybody listening, if you want to connect with me, to look me up on Facebook at Deadliest Todd and send me a message.
Do you have any questions you want
right.
to ask?
All right. Well, we're up against it. We got 10 seconds left, so we're going to have to say goodbye. Deadliest Thanks, Catch, Todd. Todd Stanley, thank you very much. This is Saturday Special, KSCO AM 1080. Goodbye.
CBS News, I'm Pam Coulter. Waiting for the weather across the nation's midsection. Forecasters have been warning about a life-threatening storm system, and the National Storm Prediction Center's Bill Bunting says it's likely to get rough.
So far, we've not had any confirmed reports of tornadoes, but we think that that will change in the next couple of hours. We have, however, had reports of hail in excess of the size of baseballs already in Nebraska.
An estimated 5.5 million people could be in the path of the potentially deadly storms. President Obama's talking trade with other leaders at the summit of the Americas in Colombia, but he's shooting down one idea designed to reduce drug trade violence. CBS's Peter Mayer is traveling with the president.
President Obama says the drug legalization idea favored by some Latin American leaders is simply not the answer. He cautions that approach could only embolden big-time drug dealers.
If they were allowed to operate legally without any constraint, it could be just as corrupting, if not more corrupting, than the status quo.
President concedes the U.S. must do more to curb demand for illicit drugs, and he's ready to discuss new strategies with the other leaders here. Peter Mayer, CBS News, Cartagena, Colombia.
The UN Security Council has voted unanimously to send a team of unarmed observers to monitor the ceasefire in Syria. U.S. Ambassador Susan Rice said the international community needs to keep an eye on what's going on there.
Just this morning, Syrian forces resumed their brutal shelling of homes and opened fire on mourners in Aleppo.
But the overall three-day truce seems to be holding. They're encouraging signs from the multi-nation talks on Iran's nuclear program, which just wrapped up. CBS's Clarissa Ward is in Istanbul.
Iran's main source of revenue is, of course, its oil. And these very tough sanctions from the U.S. and from the European Union have put a real strain on Iran's economy. So analysts are saying that there is a sense that the Iranians are looking for some relief.
One diplomat called the talks constructive. Participants plan to meet again in Baghdad in about a month. Federal health officials have identified the cause of a widespread salmonella outbreak. Reporter Sabrina Gibbons has details.
116 people now in 20 states have gotten sick after eating the tainted yellowfin tuna. About a dozen had to be hospitalized, but so far no deaths have been reported. The FDA is saying this particular product is not available for sale to individual consumers, but may have been used to make sushi and other dishes that are available in restaurants and grocery stores. Many of the people who became ill reported eating raw tuna in spicy tuna sushi. Sabrina Gibbons for CBS News, Atlanta.
BMW is recalling about 2,800 cars because of a fire risk. The recall involves six different models produced in 2011 and 2012. This is CBS News.
You see and hear ad after ad about owning gold, but they raise more questions than they answer. That's why American Bullion has created a comprehensive free gold guide packed with unbiased information about gold as an investment. Get the facts before you buy. Call American Bullion now for your free copy of the gold guide at 800-716-6878. That's 800-716-6878. Are you tired of stressing out about the economy and ready to take control of your retirement funds? American Bullion has a precise, tax-free, and hassle-free system to convert your existing IRA or former 401k into a gold IRA. That's why they're the leader in gold IRA rollovers. It's all spelled out in the free American Bullion Gold Guide that answers all of your questions in plain and simple English. Call for your free copy today at 800-716-6878. 800-716-6878. American Bullion. 800-716-6878.
Two Kentucky women have entered guilty pleas to charges stemming from an assault on a gay man.
They are considered the first convictions under a federal hate crime law that protects against attacks motivated by sexual orientation. The U.S. Attorney's Office in Lexington, Kentucky, says two 19-year-old women have pleaded guilty to helping kidnap and assault a gay man. It happened a year ago at a park in the mountains of southeastern Kentucky. Two men also face charges in the case. They are to stand trial in June. All four face up to life in prison.
CBS's Jim Crisula. There'll be another high-profile absence at today's Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Rod Stewart, who was with the band Faces before his solo superstardom, has the flu. In a statement, he said he's absolutely devastated he won't be able to be there with his old mates. On the other hand, Guns N' Roses singer Axl Rose is happy not to go and has warned the hall not to induct him in his absence. Pam Coulter, CBS News.
Good afternoon. You have it tuned in to AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz. It's 5 minutes after noon on this Saturday, April 14th, 2012. I'm Easton Allen with an update on your Central Coast roadways and your Central Coast weather. In the Felton area, Highway 9, just past Felton Empire Road, we have an accident there near the dry cleaners in that area. Two vehicles involved, CHP on the scene. Other than that, a pretty easy ride today across the Central Coast. 475-1080, the number to call with your traffic tips. Your Central Coast weather for today, partly cloudy. 10% chance of precipitation today. Highs in the mid-60s. Northwest winds at 10 to 20 miles per hour. And your forecast for tonight, also partly cloudy. Lows in the mid-40s. And northwest.